Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our 30 Issues election series. We're in issue number 20 this week, how to keep big money from destroying our democracy while Citizens United is still in effect.
6 years ago, the United States Supreme Court turned loose a flood of hidden money that is about to drown our democracy. We can blame the Supreme Court. Heck, we should blame the Supreme Court. But that is no excuse for doing nothing.
Thank you, Elizabeth Warren, speaking on the Senate floor in January of this year. Blame the Supreme Court, but that's no excuse for doing nothing, she said. Bernie Sanders did something in the primary campaign season. He refused to work with any super PACs and instead built his war chest on lots of individual contributions.
Anybody here know what the average contribution is? Right, $27. Now, this in itself is revolutionary because it shows that we can run a winning national campaign without being dependent on Wall Street and big money interests.
Sanders at a rally in Phoenix in March. Hillary Clinton used and is using all the big money tools to fund her campaign. But here's how she says she would change the system, if she can, if she gets elected.
We have to stop the endless flow of secret, unaccountable money that is distorting our elections, corrupting our political process, and drowning out the voices of our people. We need justices on the Supreme Court who will protect every citizen's right to vote. Rather than every corporation's right to buy elections. If necessary, I will support a constitutional amendment to undo the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United.
Hillary Clinton from her campaign kickoff speech on Roosevelt Island in June of last year. As for Donald Trump?
I'm using my own money. I'm not using the lobbyists. I'm not using donors. I don't care. I'm really rich.
One of the most interesting things about the Trump campaign is his candid admission of the role he used to play as a donor to political campaigns and the reasons for his donations. Here's Trump with Anderson Cooper on CNN in June of last year.
So you and I talked last time. You've given a lot of money to politicians over the years. You give to Democrats, you give to Republicans. Aren't you part of the problem?
I would. Absolutely. 100%.
You are.
Absolutely. I was on the other side. They will do whatever I want up until you decide to run.
So isn't that hypocritical to say, oh, this is a problem, but I'm going to make the most of this problem?
It's called playing the game. I was a businessman. I made a fortune. I made a lot of money. I posted over $10 billion.
So in order to make money, it's okay to play the game?
Well, it's called your life. I mean, I'm a businessman, and I contribute to people, and they treat me nicely and everything else.
So Trump is candid about buying politicians and being treated nicely and everything else, as he said. He falls shorter when pressed by Anderson Cooper right after that on any proposals for reform.
How do you change that culture of
money for
access?
Look, I just read an article where Bush is meeting with all these lobbyists in Washington, has a meeting with all these lobbyists. Every one of those lobbyists that gives money, they expect something for it.
Sure.
And that's a bad thing.
Don't you have lobbyists, though?
Absolutely. I've had lobbyists, and I've had some very good ones. They could do anything. They can take a politician and have them jump off this ledge.
Can you actually change that culture of corruption?
Well, and in the sense that the top person can't be bought.
Only in the sense that the top person can't be bought, meaning he's running with his own money. So how can the U.S. fight the outsized influence of big money on our democracy while Citizens United is still in effect? On yesterday's show, we heard from longtime campaign finance reform advocate Fred Wertheimer, who proposed three things. Pass a disclosure law so we can at least know who's behind all this campaign advertising these days. In many cases, they're allowed to hide their identities. Provide public matching funds that are big enough incentives for candidates to opt out of the big private money system. And number three.
And we actually can shut down some of these super PACs. There are super PACs that only support one candidate. They have been dominant in the presidential elections. And we can, within the Supreme Court decisions, make clear that those super PACs are coordinating with the presidential campaigns and put them out of business.
Shut down super PACs that exist solely to help one candidate as not really independent. Campaign finance reform advocate Fred Wertheimer, founder and CEO of the group Democracy 21, on yesterday's show. So let's pick it up there with our special guest for today in our 30 Issues election series, NPR's Power, Money, and Influence correspondent, Peter Overby. Hi, Peter. Thanks very much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, thanks. It's good to be back.
So how much did Fred Wertheimer there reflect the main things people say can be done with Citizens United still in effect? Are there any others that you would add to that list of, you know, what he cited as the big three?
Well, the thing that I'm really looking at is it is more at the state and local level, vouchers, a system where voters would get vouchers for $50, $100 or something that they could give to candidates, and then the candidates would cash them in, from the government. Would,
huh.
You know, the government would pay for it.
So that's different than public financing of elections. This is a voucher where, in effect, the taxpayer's money would go to the candidate of each individual taxpayer's choice.
That's right. And the thing about that is it's supposed to provide a floor for candidates. A minimum of what they need to get elected. And it's in effect in Arizona and a couple other states. And it seems to have been working. Seattle just adopted it last year, I believe. And now Washington State has a referendum on the ballot this fall. And so does South Dakota. Miami-Dade, I think, is doing the same thing.
That could have made the voucher worth $27. Ha-ha.
Could have. Might not be enough. But
but they made it worth $50. So,
yeah.
Listeners, we can bring you in a couple of ways here. One, what's the biggest donation you ever made to influence an election campaign, and what did you want for your money? 212-433-WNYC. Anyone willing to come on and, come out and play on this? What's the biggest donation you ever made to influence an election campaign, and what did you want for your money? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Either Koch brother or anyone else, welcome to call in, 212-433-9692. Mr. Soros, you out there today? Or anyone at a little less than their levels, 212-433-9692. And anyone else who has a proposal for how to minimize the influence of Citizens United while it's still in effect. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Peter, the last one that Fred Wertheimer mentioned, the one in the clip, go to court and challenge the existence of super PACs that exist solely to help one candidate. Can you explain how those work and how important they are to national politics today?
They are really important. Typically, before the candidate announces, he or she will work with the consultants and the advisors to set up a super PAC, which will then go off into the wilderness of independent operations and do what it thinks the candidate and the campaign want done. But it's staffed with people who come from the world that the candidate is in. You know, this isn't an arm's length process, except technically at the time that it's happening, the groundwork. For instance, Jeb Bush, with his super PAC, before he became a candidate, he went out and raised money for it, raised millions of dollars, which he couldn't do as a candidate because it's supposed to be, there's supposed to be this firewall. So,
right.
You try to lay the groundwork for the super PAC ahead of time, and then it goes off and acts independent. And there are lots of things that the super PAC and the candidate can do to communicate unofficially during the campaign. For instance, the candidate can put up information on the campaign website about what you know, what we think the issues are and what, you know, what's going to be important in this state or that state. And that's a message for the super PAC. It's not a message for everybody else.
Right. So the point being that the super PACs are fake independent, and
right.
So that could be challenged in court on that basis. And I guess it's worth a minute to remind people of why that distinction matters. If I understand the history right, what the Supreme Court ruled in Citizens United and way back in the 70s in Buckley versus Valeo is that money given directly to candidates and campaigns can be corrupting, so it can be regulated. Money spent by independent people, independent of the campaign, or groups independent of the campaign, by definition, because it's independent, can't be corrupting the candidate, and so we're not allowed to regulate it. Is that basically it?
Yeah, that's it. There's debate about foreign money going into super PACs. It's not supposed to be illegal, but the protections aren't really there to make sure that it's not happening.
So
but
that's
the only restriction.
Let's talk about where the candidates are. In the Hillary Clinton clip we played and on her campaign website, it's overturned Citizens United through Supreme Court appointments and a constitutional amendment if necessary. And then just one thing to work within Citizens United for the time being, and that is require more disclosure. Do you know how that would work?
I don't know the specifics of the Clinton plan, but basically what needs to happen is for nonprofit groups that are doing political advertising, the people who say there needs to be disclosure say that at least the money that goes for those ads ought to be disclosed.
Right.
And so the FEC dealt with this some time ago and said that if it's going to be if you want the money for ads being disclosed, it needs to be money that is earmarked for those ads. So someone gives $1 million for general operating expenses and those include ads, that money doesn't get disclosed. And
right.
So that's what everyone does. You don't earmark money for ads.
Right. So you can hide your identity, hide the identity of the donors who are influencing campaigns in that way. And disclosure laws was one of Fred Wertheimer's big three. Why doesn't Clinton propose the other two, challenging those one candidate super PACs in court? I realize she has a big one. And setting up big public matching funds to compete with the private donations. It seems to me that for all she speaks about how Citizens United is destructive, she's not proposing very much to work within it.
She's disclosing more than people expected, I'd say.
She's proposing not much to work within it.
Yeah. Well, right. She is. She's talking about Citizens United, which, you know, is in this day and age a major accomplishment. But for one thing, candidates still think that talking about money in politics is not a winning issue. You know, that you know, no one ever got elected complaining about money in politics. That used to be true. It may not be true this year, but you know, there have been a lot of candidates for president talking about it, and there's certainly a lot of voters talking about it. You know, I'm not sure that there's enough to drive the kinds of things that that Fred was talking about.
Right. I guess I can say this because I'm a talk show host. You may not be able to say it as an NPR correspondent, but I find it a little disingenuous that Clinton harps so much on Citizens United. Yes, it would be good from an anti-Citizens United point of view if she could appoint a justice or justices who would contribute to overturning it. But it's not easy to overturn a Supreme Court decision. They tend to respect precedent. Or, she says, if necessary, a constitutional amendment to repeal Citizens United, because that's what it takes to change a Supreme Court ruling, a constitutional amendment. Well, that's not going to happen. That's just politically impossible. Tell me if you think I'm wrong.
No.
And so what? So if you're just paying lip service, you say constitutional amendment. If you want to do something real, you propose things to work within it, like public financing of campaigns or whatever you come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Part of the problem is that it's hard to talk about specifics on the campaign trail. Just you sink into a quagmire trying to explain it. So you've got that problem. You also have the problem that there are a lot of people that don't want to change the system. You know, a lot of the players think it's working pretty well the way it is.
And as for Trump, as I think we heard exemplified in the clip with Anderson Cooper, he touts his own independence from campaign donors because he's rich, very rich, by the way, in case you didn't know. But I haven't heard him make any proposals for systemic change at all, like in that clip when Anderson Cooper followed up. So how would you change the culture? He just dodged back to himself. Is there any Trump proposal for systemic reform of this system that he condemns as corrupt?
Not that I'm aware of. What I've heard is the same thing you've heard.
Carolyn Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I contributed to Bernie Sanders for his campaign, not so much because I thought he would be president, but I liked the philosophy. I felt it was back to people controlling the candidates that were nominated, and I felt that he might never be president, but that he was going to make some inroads into the Democratic platform. And I do not support Citizens United. I don't know how I've just listened to your discussion. I don't know how we're going to get rid of it. I've read several books on justices, and I don't think that they're going to, I agree with you, overturn it that quickly. My other concern, though, is about Citizens United being open to foreign contributions to support the election of a candidate that might serve some foreign purpose. I know that sounds a little fantasy-driven, but I'm a 60s teenager, so I remember the 60s, and the 60s child, and I remember the civil rights, and I remember Big Brother, and I worry about corruption. I want the people to control again, and I don't even see the platforms of either party containing any of the interests of the citizens.
Thank you very much. Peter, do you want to expand a little bit on the concern about foreign donations? I tend to think that it's a little bit of a bogeyman concern, like, you know, there's going to be a lot more influence and legal corruption that biases what our government does in terms of policy by deep-pocketed American interests, corporations and others, than, you know, a foreign country. Iran isn't going to influence our politicians by putting money into campaign ads for one candidate or another. Russia can use other means like hacking everybody's websites. I'm kidding. But you know, Russia or anybody else. So how much is there anything documented of any influence that a foreign country has ever exerted through this method?
Not a foreign nation that I'm aware of.
But individuals, foreign individuals?
Yeah, you know, the rules are that foreign corporations can have U.S.-based subsidiaries, and those subsidiaries can have political action committees. And the political action committees are supposed to be independent of the overseas corporate leadership. And there are questions about how well that is holding up in the age of Citizens United, whether corporate money is flowing into the subsidiary from overseas and then flowing into a super PAC or a 501c4 via Citizens United.
Right, that can influence a campaign. By the way, I asked for people to call in with their biggest contribution to either a candidate or to an independent organization to influence an election, and nobody's calling with big sums. So, you know, we have modest listeners, or none of those $100,000 givers actually want to call into a show. And
I kind of had that experience too.
But so we're going to take Joe in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Brian. I appreciate you taking the call. I've been active in professional politics for 12 years, usually on the fundraising side. And if there's one thing that I would really want to say, it's that it requires so many donors to have a successful campaign, even when you're bringing in large contributions, mm-hmm. that the idea that any one in particular donor is going to have a tremendous amount of influence on that politician in the future is pretty unlikely. The, you know, politicians. And the other point that I would make on an individual basis is, if you're a person who doesn't have very much money, you should not contribute to political campaigns whatsoever. Your tiny little bit of a contribution is going to be used to, pay for sticky notes, or it'll be packaged and recontributed to another politician at some point in the future.
The first
politician is looking to curry favor.
You know, we're running out of time in this segment, but I feel like I would want to challenge both of the things that you said. So on the basis of it not making a difference, any individual donor, no matter how much they give, I mean, we see – you know, if somebody gives $100,000, $1 million, they're going to get access to start out, and then they're going to get their case heard. So even if you have a gazillion little donors, if somebody gives an outsized amount like that, they can influence a candidate, can't they?
Well, you're talking about the presidential race, or maybe there are some gubernatorial races based on state laws that would allow you to contribute that large sums of money. But
if you set up a super PAC, support them.
The vast majority of elections in this country have, you know, relatively low caps for the amount that one can contribute.
Yeah.
So these $100,000 contributions, you know, yeah, that might get you a photo with Donald Trump and a chance to talk to him about the regulatory issue that you want changed. But also bear in mind that immediately after he finishes talking to you about that $100,000, he's going to have to go off to 15 more $100,000 meetings.
Yeah, maybe. And as far as discouraging people from giving small donations, I mean, why wouldn't, especially after the Bernie Sanders campaign, and granted he didn't win, but he ran a financially competitive primary campaign against Hillary Clinton. Joe, get out of that driver's way, will you?
Standing outside, actually.
Why do you want to discourage people from giving small donations? Because if we can move to a system like we have in New York City with a 6-to-1 public match for small donations, if we can move to a system where small donations really do matter, and we've seen in instances like Sanders that they can, wouldn't you want to encourage people to do this small part rather than forfeit it to the big donors?
Each one of those $27 contributions might have made the individual donor feel good, so to speak. But Bernie Sanders, that's what I'm saying. We get so focused on the presidential campaigns, and we don't realize that there are thousands of campaigns happening across the world, the country, every single year. And the real power, it seems to know. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, is a tremendously powerful individual.
I understand. And I have to go because we're running out of time for the segment. But, Joe, I really appreciate your input, and you're saying other down-ballot races, it matters even less. See, Peter, he got me all aggravated at the end of the segment there. So as NPR's power, money, and influence correspondent, is there anything you would say by way of response or analysis to Joe's 2 points?
Well, I would throw in a new element to it, which is that in the presidential race, the McCutcheon decision of the Supreme Court is looming really large this year, the one that took the caps off what an individual could give per year. The Democrats set up the Hillary Victory Fund with the Hillary campaign, the DNC, and most of the state Democratic parties, and money is flowing through that, you know, like a gusher. It's going out to the party, to the state parties. It's paying for ground organizers in battleground states. Some of the money is coming back to the DNC where they can send it to battleground states that need more money. And it's helping Clinton. It's helping people down the ballot. It's a, you know, it's a really powerful tool this year.
Peter Overby, NPR's Power, Money, and Influence correspondent. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
And that's our 30 Issues election series, issue number 20, how to keep big money from destroying our democracy while Citizens United is still in effect. Next week, issues 21 and 22 for the first week of school, school choice and Common Core. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, some secret beaches in New York City. Oh, by the way, you won't want to go there. Stay with us.